Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, good morning, Portland, Oregon, on a, actually not a rainy day, just a little overcast day here on a Saturday morning. You're listening to Investing Simplified, where we answer your questions. You can reach us at 503-417-7626. And in studio with me is Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm.
Good morning.
Morning, Carl. And Kevin Steggy with the Baker Colson CPA firm.
Good morning, Chuck.
And Carl. And, you know, we're all set here to wrap up the year. And I know, Kevin, you're probably going to talk a lot about some tax ideas to start the new year off and finish up the old year.
That's exactly right. We've got just a scintillating segment on the net investment income tax. And the IRS over Thanksgiving came out with the regulations, which were more than just significantly different than they had indicated earlier in the year. So we've got some things to talk about that may affect our listeners. So,
well, you know, with that bit of news, I think we got to go right to the tax investigator, and we'll pass it to him and put the onus on him, don't you think?
I think that's a good idea. We can put a timer on it, and, you know.
You didn't come prepared today, did you?
Yes, I did.
Oh,
actually,
okay.
Actually, I could talk for about 40 minutes.
I know you can. So, just 40 minutes? That's a...
Well, that gives you guys a little bit of time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So do you want to go?
Hey, why not?
Okay, well, we're gonna jump right into the tax investigator and put it right on Kevin, and Carl and I are going to go along for the ride and answer questions if you got a question. And by the way, you know, don't let him get away with this tax stuff. Call in and ask him a question. Put Kevin on the spot. 503-417-7626. We're going to go right to the tax investigator.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Steggy, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Steggy.
All right, you are listening to Investing Simplified. Give us a call at 503-417-7626. And ask us your year-end tax questions, your estate, legal, and investing questions. So over Thanksgiving, the IRS finally got around to coming up with regulations for the section of Obamacare, or the Unaffordable Care Act, as our host likes to refer it as, but they came up with the regulations for the net investment income tax. And I figure since our show is Investing Simplified and we conceivably have investors listening to us, this may be a good thing to talk about to see how it will affect you at for all of 2013 and going forward. There are some the regulations that they came down with were about 20% different than they had indicated throughout the year that they would be after they get feedback from various groups and lobbyists and so on and so forth. No, not quite that bad. But they finally shook out the rules on this, and I think we can kind of see how it's going to affect us and how it may affect you in particular with your in your situation. I think the first thing of note that is fairly interesting is this has been called the 3.8% Medicare surtax. So my first question to you, fine gentlemen, is why do they call it the Medicare surtax? Why is Medicare in there? I just want to see if you guys have a clue on that.
The funds are going to be used to help Medicare.
You would think, but that is not right.
My guess is because it sounds better.
You are very close. The term Medicare is used in the regulations. It is used only in the title. That is the only place in these 477 pages that it is used.
Now, you don't mean our politicians could be deceiving us, do you?
You can take it for what it's worth, but it has nothing to do with Medicare. It is not calculated in any which way, shape, or form based on Medicare. It does not go to your Medicare account. It has absolutely nothing to do with Medicare.
We've got a caller. Veronica has a medical question, tax question. So right on time.
Excellent.
Veronica, are you there?
Hello?
Or Vernon, excuse me.
Hello.
Yeah, Vernon, you have a question?
Yeah, my lady friend said that I could, the money that I spent on, I believe it's, was it dental work or doctor visits or dermatology, that I could put that on my taxes?
Yes, you can put it on your taxes. It may or may not help you. It kind of depends on the amount of your other medical expenses and the amount of your other income, because you only get to deduct, I believe it's anything over 10% of your adjusted gross income now. And so if your income is $50,000, you have to have medical expenses in excess of $5,000 to see any benefit. That would just be an example.
Yeah, I'm about 23 or 24,000.
Okay, so once you add in potentially your Medicare insurance premiums, maybe some pharmacy costs, your doctor visits, and then if you have any out-of-pocket costs, like you were saying for dental, you could be up over the amount where there could be a benefit. Now the other thing is you do have to itemize your deductions, which, you know, if you're single, you have to have other deductions over, say, about $5,800, $5,900. So it's there's a few hoops to jump through to get a benefit of that for that on your tax return.
Oh, I probably don't have that much.
Okay, yeah. So it may not help you too much. But if you file for Oregon has lesser amounts and so lesser thresholds, so it could benefit you on Oregon if you're over age 62.
Okay, yeah, I am. Thank
yeah.
You.
Good question, Vernon. You know, Kevin, that's a great question, because I was still thinking, here's how far I go back. I was thinking it was 7% over, and you could deduct anything over 7%.
7.5%. Part of the Affordable Care Act is they raise that to 10% now.
Oh, that was nice of them.
Yes.
Okay, and then one more thing. Can you go back how many years? 2 years?
Well, you can only deduct expenses in the year that you pay them. So just what you paid in 2013 can only go on your 2013 tax return.
I see. Thank you.
Yes.
Good call, Vernon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, very good. We like to get those calls in. So 503-417-7626. So back onto the Affordable Care Act, Medicare has absolutely nothing to do with the with Medicare whatsoever in any shape, way, or form, and that is simply a name they put into the title. Carl, you are right on line with that to make it sound palatable. Now the IRS at least has the courtesy in the regulations to call it the net investment income tax.
That's NIIT.
That's exactly.
That's like Knit,
yes, a
yes.
Long knit.
Yes.
So, I thought that was a basketball tournament.
Yeah.
The NIT.
Yeah.
That's right. So first off, the first thing with it is it doesn't kick in until you have income as a single person over $200,000 or a married couple over $250,000. And if you can do the math, you can see that the marriage penalty is clearly alive and well. They have brought that back in full force, the marriage penalty, in many regards, with the thresholds, which I do not know why.
But so is that gross or adjusted gross?
That is going to be your modified adjusted AGI, your adjusted gross income, yes. And so what does it apply to? So it's going to be your investment income over $200,000 or $250,000 in a year. Now, not all of us have that much of income coming in, but we may have a transaction. Maybe you have sold a home. Maybe you sold a second home. Maybe you are someday going to sell a business. And at that point, it's going to kick in. And so it's good to know how this affects you. Investment income, as defined by this act, is going to be interest, dividends, annuities, gain from the disposition of property, royalties, rents, and any passive activities. So it covers a lot of things. Unless you are specifically working in a trader business, or you're an employee, or you're specifically excluded, which we'll talk about some of those exclusions, most of your other income where you're not actually swinging the hammer or chopping the wood is going to be subject to this.
So when you mention annuities, you're only talking about the taxable portion of the distribution, right?
That is exactly right. You're exactly right. It has nothing to do with the growth inside the annuity. It does affect the taxable portion when you pull it out. And so here's the brief list. If you're a day trader, does that affect you? Yes, it does. All of your income as a day trader is going to be subject to this. The sale of personal assets? Yes, it does. The sale of your personal residence, not the portion that you exclude. So that is not.
Is this based on the gross or the net?
This is going to be on your, well, it depends. It's going to be on the net that you realize your net
gain. Okay, because like a day trader could have right. 600,000 in trades and only have 100,000 invested.
Right. It's going to be the net on something
okay.
like that.
Okay, that's pretty important.
Exactly right. S-Corp and partner flow-through. We have a number of listeners and clients that have their own businesses, and the flow-through income from that, it's typically going to be active income, so you don't have to worry about that. We won't get into the working capital stuff and your investments inside your corporation. If you invest inside your corporation, they're going to get you on that if it's properly reported. So that would be subject to it. One thing that's not. What's one way to get out of this? Well, muni bonds, tax exempt bonds. Those are great ways to recognize some sort of investment income, but not have to report it.
Yeah, I think Detroit has some pretty good deals on that.
Yeah, I think you might want to pass on those kind of bonds.
And California is not too far behind, I understand.
Yeah, there's a few other states too. So
exactly. Yeah. Distributions from your qualified retirement plan, your IRA, your 401k, that will not be subject to it. Life insurance, no. Veterans benefits, Social Security, no. So those are some good things to.
Wow, they're gonna exempt the withdrawal from qualified retirement plans on that.
That's right. Yeah. What's some way that you can counteract having some of this income? Say you're going to be hopping over this threshold. A 1031 exchange. If you have property that you can 1031, that's one way to defer the gain and move that property and still avoid the tax. Installment sales, very significant way to avoid that. Instead of receiving a lump sum of, say, $400,000 in a year, split it over two, three years, that will work. If you have capital losses from prior years, this should offset it. If you have passive losses from your rental activities, that should offset it. Now, two things that are going to be of key importance to our folks that have installment sales that you have consummated in a prior year, and you are receiving your installment every year. That installment, yes, is going to be subject to it, and
But only the amount you receive in that year.
In that year, exactly. Yeah. And there's going to be a key election for you to make on your 2013 tax return only, this year only, is to say, this sale occurred prior to this law, we are grandfathered in no matter how much I receive on that installment. We are making the election that this is not going to be subject to the net investment income tax. Be sure to make that election if you have an ongoing installment sale. Future installment sales are going to be subject to it. So 2013, this is your only year to do that. Another election to make for 2013 only is for folks who have rentals. And if you have a significant rental portfolio and you may be a real estate professional and there's you're a pretty sophisticated taxpayer at this point, and you probably know about your grouping, where you group your rentals as either a single activity, the whole lot of them, or each rental is grouped separately. Makes a big difference on how you recognize gain and loss and your passive stuff. Well, the net investment income tax is considered a what they call a material change in circumstances, and you have a chance for 2013 only to relook at your grouping and to change that. And you only get 1 year to do it, and it's this year when you have this material change in circumstances, and it could be a significant planning opportunities for those who have a fairly good-sized rental portfolio. So just some things to consider. Definitely want to talk with your tax advisor and do some planning on that and make the right elections. So that is what we have today. One last item is going to be on trust. If you have a trust, your net investment income tax kicks in at $12,000 roughly. So if you are holding investments in a trust, and especially for like a Medicaid trust where you're not passing a lot of the income out to the beneficiary because you don't want them to show a lot of income, and you're used to paying the tax at the trust level, well, this is going to be another 3.8% on top of that.
Wow, they're already highly taxed anyway.
They are. And this kicks in very, very low.
Would that apply to like a special needs trust as well?
If the trust is going to be taxed and pay the tax and not pass the income and the tax burden to the beneficiary, absolutely. Any income over net investment income over $12,000 is going to be subject to this.
The income threshold, other than the net investment income for a trust, is relatively low, as I recall.
Very low. Instead of the $200,000, we're talking
$400 or $600 or something like
exactly.
That.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, and it jumps to $35,000 in a hurry.
By $12,000, yeah. That's when we're into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're talking really brutal to people who set up trusts.
That's exactly right.
Wow.
Well, that's why most trusts distribute the income to the beneficiaries.
Well, yeah, exactly. So, well, we're going to take a quick break and come back with Carl's comments. You're listening to Investing Simplified. If you've got a question, pick up the phone and call 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626, because what you don't know can hurt you. So you need to ask questions and find out. We'll be right back with Carl's comments on Investing Simplified.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepson.
Guns and money. Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified on this kind of a drizzly Saturday morning, and we are kind of finishing out the year this year in Investing Simplified. This will be our last actually live show for the year. And so Kevin is talking about the stuff that's going to happen in the future with the Unaffordable Care Act. And I'm going to talk a little bit about, I'm going to do sort of a summary. I want to talk about 10 steps to putting your affairs in order. That's a phrase that you often hear, and a lot of times you hear it when actually I've heard this in a doctor's office once where it says, do you have your affairs in order? And, you know, that usually doesn't sound really good, but...
That's not too exciting if you're going to see your doctor.
No, it's not. But unfortunately, that's what people often think about.
Yeah.
But I think it has a much broader a sense to it. And it's one of those things that we're also coming up on the new year when people make New Year's resolutions and they decide to do things like estate planning. That's one of the things they should consider doing. And so before I go further, I want you to remember that our telephone number here is 503-417-7626. I'm going to be talking about a number of topics that are incorporated in the concept of estate planning. And so if you have a question during that time, please feel free to call. And, you know, we don't consider it an interruption. We consider it a privilege to answer your question. So 503-417-7626. 10 steps to putting your affairs in order. Number one, protect yourself from the greedy and the unscrupulous. Now, what I'm talking about, this really could be boiled down to one phrase, plan when you can. That means that, you know, it's really easy to get into your into my age not Kevin yet, but my age anyway, and think that you're never going to lose your marbles, as my mother used to say. You know, you're never going to have an impairment. But unfortunately, the older you get, the more you realize that it can happen to anybody for a whole lot of different reasons. If you haven't done the planning when you can, then it's a real problem, and it ends up being very bad planning, and bad things can happen. Unanticipated things can happen. So the kinds of things I'm talking about as far as planning when you can regarding becoming incapacitated, get a power of attorney. There are pluses and minuses about power of attorney, and they can be made in many different ways. They can be special powers of attorney that give only limited authority. They can be general powers of attorney. But the main thing is that that you have something that allows someone that you trust, and that's the number one thing, you got to trust this person, that they can manage your financial and property affairs if you do become incapacitated, and avoid the unscrupulous and the greedy. If you have the child that you love, but you know darn well that he's been wanting that Corvette or the sailboat for a long, long time, and your retirement fund looks like a good place to get it, you know, find somebody else to do that for you.
Or just go get the Corvette for him. Before you die,
yeah, the day before.
Oh.
The day. So anyway, nominate a guardian and conservator. So just in case something bad happens, that you have expressed your desire as to who should be your guardian or conservator. That's the person that the court appoints to look after your personal affairs and look after your financial affairs. And you can do this in several different ways, but we have a specific nomination that we use. Sometimes we nominate that person in a power of attorney, any number of ways. But make your wishes known so that you don't have, and I've seen this happen, where you have fights among the family members as to who wants to be the guardian and conservator for mom or dad. And you know what that ends up doing? That ends up not just spending mom and dad's money, you know, messing up the family dynamic if it wasn't already, and more importantly, it spends the money. And, you know, because almost all of that money ends up coming out of the person you're trying to protect stuff. So it's really, it's always good to try to fix that in concrete if you can. Now, if you select someone who is really unsuitable, if you have a child or friend or somebody who's a convicted felon whose crimes were, you know, forgery and theft and ID theft, they're probably not going to get appointed whether you nominate them or not. But if you nominate someone that's reasonable and as a more or less responsible person, the court's going to place great weight on your selection. You can create a trust and appoint a trustee in advance to protect you from incapacity. So those are three big things that you can do just to protect yourself from incapacity. So protect yourself from the greedy and the unscrupulous. Now, provide for your security
for your family. And this is, I'm talking about when you pass away. So you need to put together at a bare minimum a will. The will is just a set of instructions that says who's supposed to get your property when you die. A trust is an even better way to do that, is because it can combine the incapacity planning part with the distribution, and it can avoid probate. Other things that can avoid probate are to, and they can be used in conjunction with trusts and wills, are a joint property with right of survivorship, so that when someone dies, the property automatically goes to whoever you want it to by operation of law, the joint owner. Things like joint bank accounts work this way, but there are some bad things about joint bank accounts that you probably want to avoid. Transfer on death, pay on death designations on various kinds of accounts are a good way to avoid probate, because they transfer the money to the person that is listed as your beneficiary, but they don't come with the same kind of liabilities that joint ownership do. And also designation of beneficiaries. For example, life insurance is another way to do that, or annuities. And whether you call it a pay on death or a beneficiary designation, that's essentially the same thing, that there's a contractual relationship between you and somebody and something that makes it such that the person who is supposed to receive the property when you die get it automatically. And then, of course, the trust does the same thing. It allows your trustee to distribute that property without going through the probate process. So there are a lot of reasons to do that. And then you can also, in all of that stuff, you can incorporate tax planning so that the burden of receiving your property may be somewhat less and easier. So provide security for your family through your estate planning.
You know, Carl, one of the problems you and I face in working with our clients, and me trying to get them to get over to see you to get their estate plan and finalize this thing is that every one of us have an ego, and one of the hardest things to face is that someday you might not be here. And it's a very hard thing for people to do. And I've had clients come in at 85 years old and say, well, I know I need to plan my estate, but I just haven't been able to get around to it. And what they're really saying is they haven't been getting around to facing the fact that one day they're not going to be here. That's a hard thing. It's a very hard thing.
Well, and hand in hand with that thought is the notion that every one of us says, oh, I've seen all of these terrible situations where people become incapacitated. I'd never behave that way. I'd never be like that. Hey, I know people who were brilliant and were skilled and talented, and something happened, whether they had a stroke or they had Alzheimer's or they just got some other kind of form of dementia or some kind of debilitating disease. And, you know, it's one of the big fears. Nobody wants to admit it, but the fact of the matter is it can happen to anybody for a whole variety or no reason at all. So it's a good idea to plan ahead on that one. So the another thing that we can do, the third step, and some of these are not necessarily requiring your lawyer, by the way. These are just thoughts that I have as far as putting your affairs in order in a more broad sense. So one of the things you can do is to preserve your story. In other words, somewhere record your biography, as it were, or write your obituary. Keep letters that describe, you know, things about you. You know, a lot of times I know, for example, that I've looked through a bunch of letters and things that my parents wrote, and I've learned a tremendous amount about what they went through and how they did what they did and what their thoughts were. And if you do that in some kind of an organized way, you are passing on a wonderful legacy to your kids. So just a thought. Another thought is to pass on your values and beliefs. Write what we call an ethical will. And an ethical will can be anything from, you know, this is what I believe, this is how I feel about this sort of thing, this is what I want for you. Or it could be even in the form of a blessing that says, you know, may the Lord bless you with all of these things, you know, wisdom and serenity and protection and long life and whatever you want to name in there. Anything like that is a good thing to give away. And after all, what you leave behind, for the most part, the things that you're going to be remembered for, is not your estate in the sense of the physical assets that you leave behind, but it's going to be the estate, and that meaning the impact and the influence and the difference that you've made in people's lives. So to the extent that you can continue that on, that's not a bad thing to do. It's difficult. It's very hard to do, but I suggest you try doing it. So that's number four. Number five, this again is the same kind of thing. Tell everyone you love that you love them, maybe more than once. I think that's enough said. Number six, Help the less fortunate. Give charitable gifts during your life and in your will or estate plan. Nothing can do, and that also can give you a really good tax benefit. So it's a good thing to do, makes you feel good, does something good for society, and I just think it's a good idea. Again, getting your affairs in order, it's a good thing to do. Number seven, forgive everyone for everything, including yourself. I think enough said about that. Number eight, give thanks for your blessings. We often take everything that we have for granted, and quite frankly, here in the United States, most of us have a lot more than anybody else, anywhere else. And so we're pretty darn lucky, even though sometimes things are tough. So number nine, minimize your loved one's stress when you're gone. And here's some more practical stuff. For one thing, obviously, we just talked about establishing a good estate plan. You might consider doing a prearranged funeral and burial thing. There's nothing more, quite frankly, I've done it for both my mom and dad. And, you know, doing funeral and burial plans just isn't very much fun, and it's really hard right after the death of a parent or loved one. And you know, it's just easier if you go down and they said, oh yeah, we picked out this and we picked out that, and this is how we wanted to do it, and it's all paid for. And gee, isn't that great? I think that's one of the nicest gifts that people can give.
The last thing people want to do is decide whether you want the casket to be airtight or watertight.
It's just that's not the time that you really want to hear all that stuff.
Yeah.
So develop a personal property distribution list. And what I'm talking about is many times in the wills that I do or the trust that I do, I provide that if the testator or the decedent has left a list of specific personal property that they want to give to specific people, that the trustee or the person in the personal representative should follow that. So this not only avoids squabbling amongst your survivors, it might give them something to think about. And so write that list out, put it with your will or put it with your trust, and then ask that your trustee or your personal representative, you know, distribute those properties. I think it's a really good idea. Don't give stuff twice. That's not a good idea. But nonetheless, it is a really good thing to do, and it's one of those things that the family members can kind of sit around and they can have sort of a piece of history that they can look at, that they can say, gee, this is kind of special to me, and, it's a nice thing to do. And then provide an informational memo. We've talked about this before, and there are a lot of things that go into it, but you want to, in your papers, you want to show, explain where you, who your advisors are, you know, where your investments are, what they are, leave your passwords if you've got electronic stuff, and your PIN numbers. Find a place that's safe to put those so that somebody else can find out without going through, you know. And believe me, if you have a lot of electronic stuff and you don't know the passwords and you're trying to get it from some financial company, good luck with that. It's really, really hard. And so a safe deposit boxes, make sure that they know where they are and who's got the keys, and better still, that one of your relatives is a signer on the box, so they don't have to worry about going down and opening the box. Okay, so number 10, thank yourself for putting your affairs in order.
That actually does feel pretty good when you've got in your safe deposit box, you've got your folder lined out with an index, if you will, if you want to go that far, and a step-by-step thing for when all they need to do is find the safe deposit box key and pop that open, and it's a real treasure to open that, probably. I wouldn't know personally.
The key thing here is if you don't do these things, Murphy's Law will definitely take place.
Oh, indeed, that's one of the biggest challenges people do find when they become a trustee or when they become a personal representative or executor, is they go into the house and they try to find stuff. And eventually, if they wait long enough, most of the stuff will come through the mail. You know, you'll get a statement from somebody, not all of it, but a lot of times that will. But a lot of times, you know, you end up going through all of these papers and it's hard to find all that stuff. So it's a good idea to organize that. And, oh, I found a P.S. to this, get your affairs in order. Also, hug your lawyer. That's the other thing. Yeah. So I'm done. Don't hug me.
We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with Investing Simplified, and I'm going to talk about the stock market and some ideas on what you can do to end up 2013 better than you ended 2012. We will be right back with Investing Simplified.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Well, if you had $1 million, you better give us a quick call. We'll give you some advice. And actually, we're not going to do the Knowledge Trust at this point in time. I'm going to actually talk about the... I'm going to give my stock market report, and then we'll wrap up the show with the Knowledge Trust and giving our New Year's resolutions to all of you out there. So I'm going to kind of give a little stock market report. The stock market ended on 1220. The Dow Jones closed at 16,221.14. It was up 42.06 and was up 0.27%. Not a lot of volatility in that, but the market's been going kind of crazy. Since the market high of 10907 of 14,164, we're up 14.51%. So in 6 years and 2 months, we're up 2.34% per year. Now, that in itself is not an exciting number, because if you go back to the Dow closing on 1231.99, when I say this market, we started a long-term bear market, The Dow was sitting at 11,497. So in 12 years and 11 months, almost 12 months, we're up 41.09% for the 12 years, which works out to about 3.17% per year. Now, that is probably one of the worst 12-year or 13-year starts in the history of America. So I can't be real excited about it. The S&P closed at 1818. It was up 8.72 and was up almost 0.5%. Now, where's the S&P stand when it hit its all-time high on 10907 of 1565.15? Well, we're up 16.18% in six years and 2 months, and that's a 2.61% per year. Now, if we go back to the S&P closed of 1231.99, it's up 23.76 in 12 years and 11 months, which is 1.83% per year. And my point to you is this, as an investor, this has been one of the worst starts we've had, worst decades, and we're starting into the second decade of a very, very bad market. In my estimation, when you have a Dow Jones that the 80th previous year almost averaged almost 9 to 10%, and an S&P that did average 10% or better, these numbers are one-fourth, in some cases one-third, of what we've done in the previous 80 years. That can't be exciting. I got to tell you, when I hear these guys on the news talk about stuff, and I'm going to give you a point of view right here, which if you watch the ads by General Motors, everybody assumes General Motors has paid off all their debt because they say so in an ad. They say, thank you, America. We've paid off the debt. We're rolling. Well, what they don't talk about is their unfunded debt, and they don't talk about the fact that it cost you and me, the taxpayer, $10.5 billion to bail those guys out that we ain't never getting back. Now, I don't know, $10.5 billion could feed a lot of homeless people for a long time. Now, and I just think in this country, we kind of have gotten backwards with big politics and big government because they're becoming one and the same. And we, the people, need to stand up for ourselves because if we don't, nobody else will. But I can tell you the way we're going, and I mentioned this before, but always, you know, Carl, with our clients, we always know that, you know, people come to the United States because this is the land of opportunity. And what we haven't seen is people going back to Europe. But I've had two clients in the last couple of years actually head back to Europe. And in one case, one gentleman just recently went back to Germany, and I asked him, why are you leaving the United States, and why are you going back to Europe? And he said, because I came here because of Europe going socialistic and controlling more and more of your money and controlling more and more of your life. And he said, now they're going the other way, and America is becoming more and more controlling. And he said, you know, I didn't work all my life and create my money to give it away to the government to waste. And he's actually moving back to Germany. And, you know, I've just never encountered that in the 43 years I've been in this business, that I've had people leaving the United States because of what the government was doing. It's always been the other way around. I've always met clients who are coming here from other countries because we have the land of opportunity, and we're no longer being the land of opportunity.
Could you imagine private industry that had over 2 years of time to plan a website and a program to roll it out? And, you know, if it had your name attached to it and it's your legislation, you've had 2 years to get this going, and it's such a debacle. I mean, I just can't fathom that. I mean, Amazon, eBay, I mean, you go down the list. These guys do infinitely more complicated transactions every single day, and they have no problem with it. And we've had 2 years to set this up. I mean, if you think government is efficient, wow.
Well, we all know that government is anything but efficient, and that's the problem. And I just think that when you start turning major economic portions of your government, of your economy, over to the government, when the government has a proven track record of not handling money very well. I mean, I don't know. That's kind of like, if would you really entrust your money to to somebody that is $17 trillion in debt and doesn't pay their bills? I mean, I don't think so. You know, you're not gonna give your money to that guy and say, "Take care of my money," are you?
You know, I saw a report that totaled the total wealth in all American households was about $77 trillion, and we are in debt for a quarter of that. So you could look at it that basically we would have to give away a quarter of the United States, quarter of our wealth, just to get out of debt. That's, I mean, when you look at it from that perspective, that's pretty scary. And the thing is we're doing nothing to get away from that. We're just putting up smoke and mirrors and making things, you know, sound good and look good. So,
well, I think it's very interesting when you think about the fact that Bernanke has been saying for the last 4 years, He was not gonna reduce easing until we hit 6.5 unemployment. We're actually a little over 7 by their figures. By my figures, we're about 13 to 14% unemployment. But according to the government, we're still at 7. But now Bernanke's passing the torch to Yellen, and he's saying, "Hey, we're gonna lower easing. by $10 billion a month, and we're gonna reduce that. The question is, what changed from him standing up and saying all these years we weren't going to ease it until we got down to 6.5% unemployment? Now all of a sudden, because he's walking out the door, he can pass the buck to Yellen. And what I think is going to happen is, I think if she reduces it in January, and that's a big if, I think, but if she does, and we have the market correction I think we're going to have next year, I would not be a bit surprised to see QE4 come about and go anywhere from 100 to 125 billion a month of paper, because they're going to have to. And if you just take a look at somebody who's on our path, and that's Japan. Japan's on QE8. QE8, they've been in a 20-year recession. According to my figures, we've been in about a 13-year. We're almost coming to the end of 13 years of really. That's why I say the market, you know, when you talk about the S&P over the last 12 years having a 1.83% return, I got to tell you, that's called recession. Now, it may not be called depression. We may be depressed over the returns we're getting on our investments. But the reality is, these markets are not growing. And if the markets don't grow, that's what makes our economy go. So we need to look at this and say, you know, what's really going on in this country? And what's going on in this country is, we are seeing a fundamental change of the way the government is running the country. They're taking more and more control of the economy. They're taking more and more control of the money. And unfortunately, that's like Carl picking the guy to handle your trust. When you're going to be disabled, the guy that's got all this debt and can't handle money, and all the other kids have all their bills paid off, but the guy that doesn't have any money is the guy handling the trust. And what's that going to lead to?
Well, exactly. And in fact, it's also, I think a good analogy is that in this case, you're giving the trust, the trusteeship, to not only the person who doesn't have any money and who is bad with money, but the trustee that has the drug addiction, you know, the addiction to spending or whatever it might be, the addiction to, you know, cocaine or whatever, but so that they are not only are they a spendthrift, but they are maybe a diseased spendthrift such that they really can't fix it by themselves.
Well, I see Carl has been reading his Survive and Prosper free newsletter that Harry Dinn offers off our website, and I would highly recommend you get it if you don't, because Harry Dent refers to the national debt as a heroin drug addict who's got to get a fix. And right now it's $85 billion, and he even talked about cutting it down by 10. What happens to the drug guy who tries to cut down the usage that he's taken? It usually causes a reaction, and that reaction means that they tend to come back and take more than they should. So we could be in for that. And I really am going to be surprised to see the government ease QE from 85 down to 75. I'm going to be shocked to see that.
It just seems like we've got the fox guarding the hen house, and our only way out of this is to get the fox so fat he can't get into the hen house.
Well, you know, I got some exciting news, and I let you guys know this, but as for 2014, I've got a commitment from Harry Dent and Rodney Johnson that on the third Saturday of every month, now this month we took it off because of the holidays, but starting next year in January, we will have either Harry Dent or Rodney Johnson with us on the third Saturday every month, and they've blocked it out in their time schedule for us to have them and talk about this this subject. We're going to be talking about the economy, and we're going to be talking about what's going on in the economy and what people need to look for. And, of course, it's kind of interesting because when you see these guys on TV and they say certain things, news people gravitate and grab whatever they want to grab, But Dent's been pretty clear about his prediction that we would hit all-time highs. We have hit all-time highs now. And he's felt all along that the market would end real well in 2013, but somewhere in 2014, first quarter, second quarter, we're going to have a correction in the market. I don't see anything, but if we have a correction in a market, I got to believe they're not going to reduce their easing. They're going to have to increase taking more money or printing more money. So if you got a question about this, and if you disagree with me, give me a call. 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. And I did want to mention, too, that oil did close up. It closed at 99.10, and the previous week it was 91.52, so oil's been kind of moving up. And gold actually has been going the other way. Gold closed at 1,202.80. But, Kevin, the thing that concerns me most of all is the 10-year bond rate, the 10-year treasury rate, the 30-year interest rates are going up. Is that from the previous week, we're up to 2.887. And I think the real key thing is there to look at 3%. When we get above that 3% number, we got to be looking at the economy, what's going on. We're going to come right back and close up with Investing Simplified and give our year-end either predictions or our year-end resolution. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
If I had a $1 million.
Well, nobody called us and said they had $1 million yet. So if you do, give us a call. We certainly want to talk to you about it. Well, this is going to be our year-end show for 2013. And give a little idea here of either a New Year's resolution or a New Year's prediction, because this is a kind of have a little fun time here. So Kevin, what do you got? Do you got a New Year's resolution or you got a New Year's prediction?
Well, I'm thinking if I could learn to work up the gumption to figure out how to hug my lawyer. I just that you know, if I could get down the road for on that, maybe I could I'll work on it.
It could depend on if it's a he or a she and what she looks like. You may not have to have any gumption to hug her. You know?
That's true. This is true.
I'll tell you what. Your wife can have my proxy.
That is very nice of you.
Oh, there
very
you go.
Nice.
Yeah. Boy, that's
will appreciate that.
Real diplomatic way of saying it, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So is that your resolution for the year?
How about a prediction? I predict the Ducks are going to be in the top four next year and will be they'll win their semifinal. They'll be in the national championship game next year.
So they'll at least be in the final two games, the playoff.
That's right.
Okay, it's going to be a playoff next year.
That's right.
So the Ducks are going to finish in the top four,
and this will probably be. No, I just leave it at that.
Okay. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I am. No one can ever say that I am not an optimist. So I predict, number one, the Chicago Cubs will win the World Series next year. And number two,
wow,
the Buffalo Bills will win the Super Bowl.
This is recorded. If this comes true,
I didn't say it was based on any kind of rational thought or fact. Okay. This prediction.
They say if I had $1 million, well, tell you what, if you had about $1,000, you could probably drive down to Vegas. You could bet that $1,000 on those two predictions, and you would probably be worth more than a millionaire because those are extreme log shots.
He could bet $1 on that and make $1 million.
Maybe $1, yeah, especially the Cub part.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, the Cubs are about as far from being a championship team as you can possibly get.
Hope springs eternal.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I'm going to give some pretty, time-tested predictions, and that is that I think both the S&P and the Dow are going to close 2013 at all high time numbers. I think they're going to close at all time highs, and I think they're going to carry that through at least the first couple of months of 2014, and I think we're going to have a major correction in 2014, and one of the reasons is this whole economy, if you look at the economic bubble that we're in right now, is kind of another tech bubble. It's a tech bubble because if you think back to 99, in the late 90s, you could buy about any tech stock and it just went up and up and up. And if you look at what's happened the last year to Facebook, to Twitter, to LinkedIn, to all these internet-related industries, they don't have the earnings, but their stock is way over book value. What's that called, Kevin?
A bubble.
A bubble. Yeah, I think it is. So I just think, you know, beware. Kevin, somebody wants to get a hold of you. How do they do it?
BakerColson.com. And our phone number is 503-666-5569.
And Carl?
WarrenAllen.com and 503-255-8795.
And you get me at PFGWM.com at 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. And I'll say this, if you're going to do any planning before the year ends, you better get on the phone to Carl to do your estate planning. And if you're going to do any tax planning, Kevin, they have till 12/31, but they better get a hold of you long before that.
That's true.
So, buyer beware. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you next year on Investing Simplified.